This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring goes the bell. The cook in the lunchroom's ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your books. Gee, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Big Ed came through with that song. Good morning, and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with Big Ed. Thank you for joining us on this Monday, July 13th. We did a little school music for you because we're going to talk about schools in a few minutes with Jonathan Butcher of the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk about three things to know about reopening schools this fall, you know, with the pandemic and everything. And should we open them? And if we do open them, what do we need to know? You know, if you're a parent or in any way connected with a school child. So stay tuned for that. And what happened to the notion that warm weather would kill off this COVID-19? And I mean, we got warm weather down here in Florida, 90-degree weather. What's going on? Florida just had its worst one-day virus hike. So we're going to take a look at all of that as well. And Thomas Sowell, now he is one of America's, in my opinion, most esteemed Black conservatives. He's out of Stanford University. Talks about how close we are right now to losing the country we know. And when this guy says something like that, I listen. And we're going to talk a little bit about what he said. And in our ultimate top 10, we're going to find out if Ed knows who is the greatest Western movie star of all time. He's nodding his head. He thinks he knows. We'll find out. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. It is, you guys, it's the best place to go for a haircut in Tampa Bay, and I've been to a lot of them. And I tell you, it's in Dunedin. It's in the Overcash Plaza. You got to call for an appointment. The number is 727-733-3773. Again, 733-3773. They're open Tuesday through Saturday. Andrew's Master Barbershop. All right. Also, can't listen to us in the present tense? Then you can listen to us in the past tense. What I mean by that is Ed sets up all of our shows on podcast. So if you want to listen to any of our shows at any time, you can go to OurFreedomWorks.com and hit the podcast button at the top. Our, O-U-R, FreedomWorks.com. Well, we got, you know, I was hoping by now this whole pandemic thing would be over. And that was back in May. I thought, you know, by the end of July or middle of July. Unfortunately, that is not the case. And we've got a school situation coming up now. Had to close the schools early, of course. When this pandemic struck, and now we got to open them up again in some way, shape, or form. And I think most parents want it open. They're getting a little bit worried about the education of their kids. And let's be honest, I don't think most people think that the kids are getting that well educated sitting around at home. It just doesn't happen, good intentions or not. So we'll talk a little bit about that later. In the meantime, you know, here in Florida, because we have warm weather most all the time, people talked about this pandemic, this COVID-19, being affected by warmer temperatures. Ed, you've heard that, right? The warmer the temperature, maybe the less, you know, the chance of getting the virus. I thought there was some truth to that, and there may be. But why do we have the largest one-day hike in virus cases here all of a sudden, and we're right in the middle of the hot
one. Because
weather.
More and more and more people are getting tested.
Well, that answers the question, and we were going to get, actually, I was going to give you that, but you're too smart for me. But indeed, Florida shattered the national record yesterday for the largest single-day increase in cases. and it's in any state since the beginning of this pandemic. More than 15,000 cases. Now, like Ed said, we're testing a lot, and that's what's bringing this thing up. According to the State Department of Health, just over 15,000 people tested positive on Sunday. That's a total now of about 270,000 cases. And also yesterday, 45 people died from the coronavirus. Now, California had the previous record. They had about 11,700. And so we had about 15,300. New York was third. They've had in one day 11,571. Why all of a sudden do we have all of these? Well, mainly it is because we're doing some pretty sophisticated testing here. And you would think because we have an older population, I bet you we have more people in nursing homes here than maybe even in California. You're going to have a bigger incidence of fatalities at that age. So all of that makes some sense. In the meantime, a few months ago, some scientists were hoping that warm weather, summer conditions might help tamp down this virus. And the truth is, look at Florida right now. Studies have shown that simulated sunlight, you know, in labs and everything, can inactivate the virus on surfaces. And in the air, it helps to evaporate the virus, apparently. And one study found that the virus deteriorates much more quickly in warmer weather. Yet case counts of this virus are surging right now all over the place. And here we are in the midst of the summer. Three likely reasons. Number one, the immunity to the virus is still low, and you need to have a high immunity to then look at the temperature to be a factor. And as long as there are people out there that still haven't caught the virus, that is one of the things working against temperature. That's what the experts say.
The other thing, too, with 15,000 new cases, you'd think the hospitals would be busting at the seams.
Yeah, you would.
If these were any serious cases other than normal or subnormal flu-like symptoms.
So do you think these are minor,
Mild.
90% of people that get this thing aren't going to have any problem. I mean, maybe a minor problem.
Some didn't even know they had it.
Right.
You know?
And apparently the younger you are, the better off you are.
Right.
And even, like, if you're even the really young, I'm talking about like 8, 9, 10 years old, they might even be less susceptible than maybe a 20-year-old.
Only three kids under
Isn't
the age of 12. Only
Isn't
three kids under the age of 12 in Florida have passed away. All had very, very serious underlying conditions.
You hear about that guy that intentionally got the virus in his 30s? He went to one of those virus parties. You hear about that?
I heard there was those stupid parties going on.
Yeah, right? Stupid is not the...
Yeah.
And he caught it, and he died. And he said, towards the end, he said, I should never have done this. Well, no kidding. He was like 30 years old. They said he was in great health. I don't know how great a health.
What did his tombstone say?
I told you I was sick.
No, that's the other one. I won, but I lost.
Yeah.
Probably something like that.
He should have said it was a great party, but not worth that.
No.
Or not worth this. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to take our break, and we're going to talk about reopening schools, a very serious subject, in the midst of this pandemic.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities, the best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you...
Hey, we are back. I'm delighted to have Jonathan Butcher join us. He is a senior fellow at the Goldwater Institute and a senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. Jonathan, welcome. We're going to talk a little bit about something you've penned. Three things that parents need to know about school reopenings. And I would suspect a lot of parents are very, very excited about maybe the prospect of their children getting back to school. I don't know. Do studies show most of them want the kids to go back into the building?
Well, there was a poll from Gallup just a couple of weeks ago in June that started to show a bit of a shift where parents were ready for students to go back. Now, this was a change, I think, from some surveys we saw in May in particular, where parents were still nervous about it. I think, you know, we saw a survey last week, actually, that also showed that parents felt like their students did not learn as much through the move to online instruction in the spring as they would have had the students been in school. So, you know, I think parents are seeing how important this can be for their children.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's a no-brainer. I mean, just think about it. Kids are at home with a computer and no real supervision. How can the parents be there all the time during that period, right? And of course, they're kids. They're going to start playing their online games or whatever else. The school environment is not going to be there.
Yeah, and I think especially for younger kids, it's tough to keep them focused on a device or on a screen for a long period of time. And now, at the same time, it's fair to say that there are full-time virtual schools that have been doing this for many, many years that, you know, they have a routine and I think they know how to make that work for students that have chosen to learn that way. This was very different, though, where you had districts across the country that had never done this before up and saying to their students, you know, like it or not, here's, you know, we have to do this online approach. And I think that's what districts struggled with, was just not being prepared.
Now, President Trump is an advocate of these kids getting back to schools. And he talks about how, you know, maybe he'll do something about it. But the truth is that the governors reign stronger on that constitutionally and local authorities. And you say, indeed, that these decisions should be made as locally as possible as whether or not the kids come back, and then how to work out the logistics, right?
Yeah, without question. And I think that even in areas where, let's say that case rates may be higher in one particular district or city, if, you know, a neighboring city or district doesn't have the same numbers, there's no reason to keep those schools closed, right? I mean, I think the way to approach this is for people to be prepared to self-quarantine, and if they show symptoms, they need to not be out in public or certainly not sending their kids back to school. I think that's a great way to allow us to keep as many things open as we can without, again, having widespread shutdowns that are affecting, you know, thousands and thousands, if not millions of people, or in this case, students who are not, not being affected by the virus right now.
Right. We're talking with Jonathan Butcher. He's a senior fellow at the Goldwater Institute, senior policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. And we're talking about the things that parents should know about school reopenings. Now, you say in this piece, Jonathan, that about 40 to 60% of parents have said that they're considering homeschooling this fall. Now, the ones that do homeschool and do it for real, I think are great. But again, that thing about, good intentions, I mean, is that a good idea? 40 to 60%, is that an alarming number?
I wasn't surprised by the number because I think parents were frustrated by the way that some districts were either slow to respond to the closures and putting material online, to the parents that were fearful of students going back into a situation where they might be exposed to the virus. And you're exactly right. Homeschooling is just not for everyone. And so I think those who are motivated and have an incentive to continue with it, those are the ones I think obviously are going to, stick with this even into the fall. But two things to watch here. The first is that there was a headline in North Carolina just last week that said that the state website for registering for homeschooling had been overwhelmed and was shut down because of the number of people that were applying. So interesting, right? It's interesting to see how many are really committed. Now, in fairness, when you have two parents who work, when you have a single parent in the home, maybe with multiple kids, it's not going to be the right fit. So the reality is we need to have, frankly, a landscape of learning options for students now, but look, before the pandemic and after.
Mm-hmm. Now, the teachers' unions, from what I can see generally, and they operate and they're most, they're strongest in the big cities, they don't seem to be really excited about opening up again. Is that right? And why do you think so?
Well, look, what we've seen from their press releases and their reports, they're demanding significant new federal spending to the tune of, hundreds of billions of dollars. Collective bargaining agreements are in there as well, which I don't know what that has to do with student learning or getting schools, reopened again, as well as, I think, a recognition that in places like Los Angeles and Chicago, these unions have moved to shut down the charter schools and not allow charter schools to grow or to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a significant issue here because these are the cities where you have failing public schools, generational poverty, and charter schools have been a huge way to help reverse the trend of just students feeling trapped.
Yeah, I would think that the private schools would tend to have more of them that would want to open for some reason as opposed to the public schools. That's what I'm getting at, that the unions are not that big on opening their own schools. Now, when it comes to the charter schools, and you mentioned this in here, I think this is a very interesting point, private schools, they don't have the lifeline, that money that will come in to back them up while things are down, like a public school, right? So they're in danger of not being able to continue, right?
Well, and that's right. And other organizations that we partner with and do research on this around the country, like the Cato Institute, are tracking the number of private schools that are closing down and just not going to reopen because parents have had to pull out typically. So this is, this is a significant part of civil society that we really need to watch, because if we lose the place that private schools have in communities, that's really takes away what I think makes communities unique. I think what religious schools add to local neighborhoods is so important, and the churches that they partner with and the families that they serve. So. This is why I think private schools are, from what I see, at least in local areas, private schools have some, more direct plans to open up on time and in person with their communities because they know they need to in order to stay open.
On a side issue on that, Betsy DeVos was on, I think it was Fox News Sunday, and was talking a little bit about the private schools and the school openings and you know, all of that. And I'm thinking she's taking a lot of heat because she is an advocate. Needless to say, she is an advocate of the private schools and the voucher system, and the unions don't like her because they feel threatened by, I think, they feel threatened by private schools and school vouchers. Yet, you know, it's just the very, you know, school vouchers handed to inner city parents. I think it's maybe the greatest ticket for these kids to get out of the generational, you know, poverty. I guess I'm just speaking on and on here a little bit, but I wanted to get your thought about Betsy DeVos and the whole private school situation right now. And is it, you know, has it made a dent in the educational uplifting of inner city kids?
Well, I think the bully pulpit that they have is so important right now. They can elevate this issue and talk about, just like what we were discussing a moment ago, that important place that private schools hold in their local communities. The administration changed their talking point pretty quickly from withholding money from public schools to saying, well, we should give this money to the parents if the public schools remain closed and allow the parents to make choices. I'm a little nervous about what would happen with federal money suddenly, you know, being used in that way.
I think
there are constitutional issues here and state responsibilities that would complicate that. But I think this concept, though, that you have an administration who's ready to say, hey, look, states, if schools stay closed, then you need to consider allowing parents to make choices about where and how their children learn and turn your taxpayer resources, back to taxpayers so that they can decide how to help their students.
Yeah,
so
indeed.
I think,
go ahead.
Yeah, so that's a fascinating, I think, concept right now, because that should be the goal, right, is to help students get to a place where they are back learning and getting what they need. Because we're on the verge, we've lost a half a semester, and, you know, schools delay, they could lose perhaps another half a semester.
Oh, yeah. No, these are vital years for these kids to be educated. And, you know, here in Florida, they get around the situation to some extent of government involvement in vouchers by having businesses take a tax deduction, and that money goes into a fund that parents can draw from to send their kids to to another school other than the public school, the local public school, which I think is a great idea. It was a kind of a brainchild of Jeb Bush when he was our governor. I think a lot of other states have taken that up, and I want to see more vouchers. Quite frankly, we talk about it here on the show all the time. Given to these, especially, I think, to the impoverished families, to get the opportunity to get out of a school that's just not doing the job. Your thought?
Look, yeah, Florida is a national leader in the parent choice and education movement, and Florida is really an example that other states could look to because there are so many options. You have charter schools. You have scholarships, like you said, for children from low-income families. You have education savings accounts for children with special needs. You have a scholarship program for children who feel threatened or who have been bullied in schools. I mean, these are all programs that I think address very significant needs of children from different backgrounds, you know, in the school system, and that's extremely powerful. Yeah, I think that the families that have options like this really can begin to look at opportunity, and especially now when there are questions about what students are being taught in schools when it comes to history and what's coming from the New York Times and
the 1619 Project
and all those. Yeah, this is...
We could do a segment just on that alone, on what they are being taught. But the first thing, of course, is to get them back into the school. And so finally, Jonathan, get your crystal ball out. In September, do you think most all the schools will have the kids back?
Well, I think it's going to vary from place to place, and it's going to be different because Montana is not New York, is not Florida, you know, is not North Carolina. I think that those families that have choices So who are already using education savings accounts or who already have scholarships for private schools will be the ones who can adapt the quickest to whatever they are presented with. I was talking with a school leader in Pennsylvania just the other day who was saying, look, we want to get back to full-time learning as quickly as we can, but the reality is right now we're going to have to go 2 days in person, clean the school, 2 days in person with half the enrollment, clean the school on Wednesday, 2 days in person with the other half, mm-hmm. with online happening at the same time. And so if we really believe that local educators know what is best, then and that they've talked to their families to decide what plan will work for them, then, you know, we've got to be prepared, you know, to accept their kind of phased-in approach.
Yeah. Can you take a quick question from my buddy Big Ed here?
You'd be glad to.
Yeah, go ahead, Ed.
Hey, Jonathan, quick question. When we're seeing a lot of major sports franchises come back in a bubble sort of way where they're keeping players immune from everybody else, and players that still don't feel comfortable have the option to opt out without, say, losing their job. They just don't get paid. I was wondering, with teachers, would they have that same type of scenario that where if they don't feel comfortable going back to the school, because kids are carrying this thing like crazy, and they could be taking it home to their people that they live with. So do you think that teachers going back to school may have that option to opt out and not go?
You know, it would certainly be up to the district. If they did decide to do that, schools are going to have to be creative and find ways to get either a teacher at the same level or a teacher of the same class to record their instruction and maybe provide some lessons part-time at home to some students so that they could come in person as much as they can, and then be at home learning as much as they, you know, when you don't have a teacher who can be there directly with them. You know what I mean? There's going to have to be some creative thinking if teachers don't feel comfortable to come back for schools to use the resources that they've got. And, I mean, look, districts, they often pay administrators in the six figures, and they don't pay teachers that much. Teachers usually don't make sometimes half, maybe slightly more than that. There are resources that districts have, okay, that they can put towards more effective uses of what they've got. And I think this is a time where we really should not accept anything less than districts saying, okay, you know, we've got to be ready to, you know, trim the overhead, to deal with waste, to deal with fraud and abuse, and all of those things to make sure the money's being used in the right way.
Well, Jonathan, it's a pleasure talking with you. Such an important topic, and I appreciate your time with us. I know down the road we'll have an opportunity to talk again. Maybe the next time we talk, a lot of the kids will be back in the classroom. I hope so.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Jonathan Butcher, Goldwater Institute at the Heritage Foundation. All right. We are going to take our break, and among other things, when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about Thomas Sowell. He's one of America's most esteemed black conservatives, and I want to talk about what he thinks about how close we are to losing the country we know.
And it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bite with its teeth, baby.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi,
I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the TAN Talk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's TAN Talk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Monday, very warm and humid Monday, and as you would expect here in Tampa Bay. And I was watching television last night, and there's a show called Life, Liberty, and Levin. It's on Fox News, and Mark Levin, conservative, Jewish writer, and I guess commentator, had Thomas Sowell on. Now, Thomas Sowell is an economist, a conservative, a black man. He's been around for a long time. And during the interview, they were talking about this this whole situation of what is happening in our country, aside from the pandemic, as in all of the rioting that is going on and the woke culture, you know what I mean? If you say something the wrong way, your job is in jeopardy, all that kind of thing. And systemic racism. First of all, Thomas Sowell says nobody knows what systemic racism is. He says people can't even define it. And yet we hear that term being used all the time. Sowell says, well, it really has no meaning that can be specified and tested in the way that one tests hypotheses. Now, he's an economist, right? So there's no way of even testing it. But you hear that thing thrown about. And basically, Sowell said, you know, if you repeat a lie often enough and loud enough, it starts to become believed. And that's true. It's true. Now, he's very concerned. He didn't think this way before. He always felt that we could bounce back. But he's very concerned right now for our way of life here in the United States, you know, our constitutional way of life. What's going on, you know, think about it. All these generations of kids that have grown up listening to these liberal professors. I used to think, well, maybe a little bit of that in college. No. It starts in grammar school with these kids. So no wonder they come out thinking, you know, they're entitled. They also come out thinking that maybe they don't have to work so hard because the government will help provide, which is, you know, a terrible situation in terms of bettering our country and bettering ourselves. But when I hear a guy like Thomas Sowell, an economist and black conservative, talk about all of this, I do start to worry. I really do. Hey, we got our eye in the northern sky with us. Angelo Ceresi up in Rochester, New York. We get to talk with him every Monday for a little bit about how things are going and his perspective. First of all, Angelo, you keeping safe and well? And secondly, how's the governor handling the situation there in the great state of New York?
Not that great.
Not that great. Okay.
Not that great at all.
Really?
He's trying to punt now and kick back that he did an investigation into himself, how he handled the nursing home deaths and everything like
yeah.
that. He found that he didn't do anything wrong.
Aha! He has absolved himself.
Yes.
Isn't that a nice thing to be able to do, to absolve yourself of any wrongdoing?
Yeah, absolutely. Him and de Blasio,
Well, now, they don't get along, Angelo. I don't know why. Maybe it goes back to something way, way back. But apparently de Blasio gets along with nobody. He probably doesn't even get along with his wife. I can't find anybody that likes Mayor de Blasio. If you find somebody, will you send them down here? I want to see what they look like.
I don't know. I don't think anybody wants de Blasio around.
So why is it that Cuomo, the governor of New York, and de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, what's wrong? Do you know anything about that feud?
Not really, no. I think they both are fighting to be in the limelight, you know?
So it's an ego thing, maybe?
Yeah, it's probably an ego because, you know, de Blasio, he was running for president, you know? And Cuomo, he wants to be president too, you know?
Yeah, I suppose.
So, you know, you got two egos going at each other, so they have to make each other look bad because they're competitors.
Do you think that part of it has to do with the way de Blasio is handling the police situation in the city, and that Cuomo thinks that maybe the police should be cut a better break? You know how they're going to defund and this and that. And then de Blasio, what is he thinking? He goes out in front of Trump Tower.
Yeah, and paints
black. He looked like a total, I don't know what, standing there with a little mask on and pretending that he's doing some sort of work, putting down Black Lives Matter. Doesn't he have anything better to do? When all of this trouble is going on in that city, he's there doing that. Even the liberal Democrats must realize this guy has, what's the word when you don't, he's tone deaf.
Right, he's not, he paints that Black Lives Matter right in front of Trump Tower.
Yeah.
And then he also says that no large gatherings or anything like that.
There you go.
Black Lives Matter.
They were all standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder.
Yeah, and then he's got Al Sharpton next to him. They're all painting that.
Yeah, now there's another one, Al Sharpton.
The Daily Double.
Al Sharpton has never found, I mean, he must have been gleeful when he heard about the George Floyd incident. That's the way I think. You know,
you know now that.
Oh, boy. Hey, you know, get my reservation. Get my reservation. I'll be on all the talk shows, you know?
Right. Well, this thing with George Floyd, in my own humble opinion, really, okay, he never should have passed away like that.
Oh, no, it was terrible. There's no question about that.
But they took the ball on that and they ran with it. It was just a ripe situation. It was the perfect storm to start all this protesting and rioting and looting to, you know, for Black Lives Matter and Antifa to start their cause. I mean, this just was, I mean, it just blossomed into this thing so fast. And, you know, well, you know, Black Lives Matter, they profess Marxist ideas, right?
A lot of them do, for sure. No question about it.
And
a lot of these protesters, these far lefties, let's be honest, they don't like the Constitution.
No, they actually, like you said, they, like that economist was saying last night, this whole thing is trying to overturn our country. This election is actually between communism and a free America. And like you said, the more people keep talking about it, they start believing this thing, like the Russian
systemic racism.
The systemic racism. There's no systemic. They're trying to say that there's the system of our country. They're trying to tell you that it's built into our system.
Right.
That America is the one that started slavery and this and that. It's part of our system.
Yeah, it's part of the white genetic makeup.
Right.
It's so ridiculous to...
And then the more you keep talking about it, like they did with the Russian collusion and all this other stuff, and they keep talking and talking and talking about it, people start believing it. It's always there in the forefront.
Yeah.
And it's just like they've made Trump out to be the worst person that could ever have walked the face of the earth. And, you know, and it's not true. They're just trying to overturn this country. The American people had better wake up, because come November 3rd, and they wake up November 4th, this country could be waving the hammer and sickle in front of the White House.
Oh, boy. Well, let's...
And that's a sad scenario.
Yeah. We're talking with our eye in the northern sky, Angelo Ceresi. He's up in Rochester, New York. So we get a taste of what a northerner might think of what's going on. Well, this might be a positive in all the gloom, Angelo. A poll that is, let's see. Well, first of all, even though Joe Biden in almost all of the polls has a lead over Trump.
And that's what they were saying about Hillary Clinton also.
Right. Well, a new shock poll reveals Americans are not quite as eager to hand over their freedom as some have said. According to Real Clear Politics' latest aggregate of polls, although Biden leads Trump by 8 points, a poll conducted by the Democracy Institute, it's a Washington-based think tank, reveals that Americans are not buying the narrative that the U.S. media is trying to advance. It says, contrary to what the media would have you believe, 77% of the likely voters surveyed do not view Mount Rushmore as a racist monument. When asked of which two phrases better fit their own thinking, Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter, for Black Lives, 29%, for All Lives, 71%. Most notably, rather than showing Biden with a sharp advantage, the survey forecasts a much tighter race, with each candidate getting 47% of the popular vote. Wow. So it'll be a matter of which states,
I cannot believe any red-blooded American, any patriotic American can ever vote for the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is basically the Communist Party. The Communist, AOC, Nancy Pelosi, she's become a communist. They've, all these people have taken over. In fact, I think, didn't Biden meet with Bernie Sanders and his people and taking on a lot of the stuff that he wanted to do for the United States?
Oh, sure.
Bernie Sanders is an avowed communist. He can say socialist, democratic socialist, whatever. His policies, his beliefs, and his ideology is that of the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah, anybody that wanted to spend their honeymoon in Moscow, which
think
he did.
Think about it.
Which
any
he did.
American, what this country was founded on, any red-blooded American, okay, I can't see voting for Joe Biden.
Well, that's why we hope the silent majority is going to speak out in November, that there is one.
Well, the silent majority has to become the vocal majority. You know,
right.
We don't protest, we don't write, but we got to start getting out there saying, hey, enough is enough. This is America. You know, they talk about the systemic racism, this and that. When I was in the military, Vietnam, all that, white, black, blue, yellow, green, whatever you want to say, we all bled red, white,
exactly.
And blue.
Exactly.
There is no systemic racism in this country. They're just telling you that. They want you to believe, just like Adolf Hitler.
It's a divide and conquer.
Aryan race.
Yeah. It's a divide and conquer philosophy.
Right. They're trying to take down our statues.
They're trying to divide people.
Trying to change our culture.
Trying to divide people up.
Right.
Because that's easier to bring, you know, to disassemble what we believe in.
Right. This whole thing, if anybody knows their history, is what Hitler did in Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
and what the Bolsheviks did in Russia. I mean, tore down statues, changed, talk about the Aryan race and this and that, using a scapegoat of people.
Right.
You know, using a people as a scapegoat,
yeah.
That ruined the economy. You know, the Aryan race, that's systemic racism right there.
It is exactly.
But there is no, mm-hmm. like that economist said, there is no terminology for systemic racism.
There's no data to come up with and to back it up. It's been a pleasure as always, Angelo. Thank you so very much, my friend. Stay well. We'll talk with you again next week.
Talk to you next week. Always a pleasure, Paul.
All right. Thanks, my friend. There he goes, Angelo Ceresi, our eye in the northern sky. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, did you know that they're retiring the Redskins logo? We're going to talk to Big Ed. What's going to be the name of the Washington football team, Ed? We'll find out.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back for the final segment of Freedom Works. By the way, we are here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tantalk Radio Network. And we thank you so very much for being with us. Before we get to what's going on with the Washington football team, kind of some sad news, Ed. Kelly Preston has died. She is was an actress. She starred in such movies as Jerry Maguire and Twins. And, of course, she was the husband of John Travolta, who lives just up north of us here. She was age 57. She died of breast cancer. And I think you had did you not have a connection with Kelly Preston?
Well, yeah, we had a little gathering. Her and Kirstie Alley came out, and we hosted a little thing for them in the parking lot area there. And I got to know her for a couple hours when she was here. So very, very down-to-earth person. She was married to John for 28 years.
Yeah.
Hollywood doesn't stay together long, those couples, but they did. They got along great.
Yeah. In fact, I think she met him on one of the movies that the two of them were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned she starred in Twins, Jerry Maguire.
So many. Tiger's Tale.
For Love of the Game.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside Kevin Costner. You remember that movie?
Yeah.
She also did a guest starring roles in TV, like the series Medium, CSI Cyber. And yes, Travolta and her met while filming The Experts
in
1988. So there you go. All right. The Washington football team. Dare I say Redskins, Ed? Are they going to fire us? Anyway, the Washington Redskins are going to change their name. That's for sure. They announced today that they are going to change their name and their logo.
Yep.
After about 87 years of using it.
I don't think you're going to see a huge change. They're going to keep the colors. So the only thing different on the uniforms will be the name on the front of the jersey, Redskin, and then the logo on the helmet, which I would think they're probably going to try to get it as close to the one that's on there now. Because you remember when they do their throwback, they have that arrow thing. Now, I've heard they may change the name to something like the Washington Warriors. I said Washington Cherokees.
Yeah. Something. You know, I think that you might be right about that. Now, let me suggest the Warriors. Marquette University used to be the Warriors. They got rid of it because, and this is some years back, they said that it was offensive, the Warriors. So I'm wondering, Washington Warriors is two W's in a row. It would sound good. I think it would be good. But maybe the Cherokees, because it's a particular...
Well, Golden State basketball.
Yeah, they're Warriors.
They're Warriors, and they're okay. So,
but I got a better name because it's in Washington. It has nothing to do that much with Indians. I want to do something that has to do with politics and with what's going on in Washington. That's the point.
Washington Criminals?
No, the Blowhards. The Washington Blowhards.
I think that'll be offensive. I don't think that'll make the list. And you have to go to every person in the U.S. and ask their approval.
All right. Well, I got another one that's probably a little more appropriate. The Washington Liars. How about that?
Yeah.
The Liars. That's an easy one. It's a short one. You can show. It can be on the back of your jersey, really, in the front of your jersey, real easy. The Liars.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Who knows these days?
Okay.
Who knows?
All right. Well, let's find out if you know something, Ed, because I got the top 10 greatest Western stars of all time in the movies.
It has to be. Are you a fan? Thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Are you a fan of Westerns?
Not so much.
You don't like them that much? Oh, no kidding. When you were a little boy, you weren't watching Saturday morning Westerns on television?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, we got this from kind of a combination of two different websites, Wikipedia and PastFactory.com, and my own input, okay? These are the top 10 greatest Western film stars. Number 10, Hoot Gibson, huge Hollywood star. I know you're going to make a joke about this, but in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, he had a big white sombrero. No, I wasn't around when he did it, so don't go there, but... saw him on television, and his hat looked bigger than his head. It looked too big. Anyway, he did hundreds of movies, and he's number 10. Number 9, another guy that crossed from the silence to the talk is Buck Jones. He acted in over 160 Westerns, including The Lone Rider, One Man Law, and Empty Saddles. Number 8. Jimmy Stewart. Did you know he was a big Western actor? Yeah, he was in the 50s. He turned to Westerns one after another. Winchester 73, Broken Arrow, How the West Was Won, many others. Number 7. You ever hear of Joel McRae?
No.
Joel McRae acted in Westerns for so many decades, 5 decades of Westerns, and very, very good at it. Number 6. Another one, and I think a buddy of Joel McRae, Randolph Scott. Ever hear of him?
Nope.
Randolph Scott, prominent Western actor from 1928 all the way up to 1968. Number 5, and this guy I'm sure you heard of, Gary Cooper.
Yeah.
You've heard of Gary, right? He was in High Noon, The Westerner, The Virginian, and he also started in the silent movies. Number 4. Who is the king of the cowboys at?
Oh, I don't know.
Roy Rogers.
Oh, okay.
You know him. He started in 1935 in a Gene Autry film, and he appeared in over 100 Westerns. Number 3, Gene Autry himself, the singing cowboy, the original singing cowboy. He also sang, did you know this, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? He made that popular. Number 2. John Wayne.
Oh, no.
I know.
Now I don't know.
John Wayne started acting in the Westerns in the silent era. And in the 30s, he was big-time Westerns in B-films. And, of course, he made over 142 films. True Grit, The Searchers, Red River, just to name 3, in which he really was good.
Well, they haven't made any real decent Westerns in how long now?
It's quite a while.
Yeah, because all these are 40s, 50s.
You're right, sir. The last one I remember was Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven. Do you remember the movie Unforgiven?
Yep, that was a good movie.
It was a good movie. All right, even though you won't get this, but just for fun, who do you think is number 1?
I have no idea. I mean, that's the only one that I could... Well, who's the guy that did Gunsmoke?
That would have been a good one. Richard, or James Arness. Mm. That would have been good, except he didn't do movies. He did TV.
Oh,
TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's Tom Mix. No list of Western greats would be complete without Tom Mix. You know how many? He did more than 300.
Wow.
300 cowboy movies, starting in 1910. Wow. All right. Mm. There you go. I think John Wayne could be up there at number 1, too. All right, my friends. Thank you so very much. We will be back tomorrow. But do remember that freedom works.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.
Washington name.